Ladies and gentlemen, this is Phyllis Pricer, your hostess for The Higher Dimensions. And we're glad to welcome you to our show this week. We have a wonderful guest, an author with a brand new book out. It's called Courageous Souls. And the question is, do we plan our life challenges before birth? The author is Robert Schwartz. Welcome.
Thank you, Phyllis. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a joy to have you. Robert, our show is The Higher Dimensions, and we talk about many things that take place over and above. And one of them, and I happen to subscribe to the theory, is that we do pre-plan our birth, our life, and the challenges that we face on this earth plane, and we do it with love of our soul group and with our family group here on this earth. And as I mentioned earlier to you, it is a really good book that you've written. It's very comprehensive, and I think you put it in a way that I would be hard put to better.
Thank you, Phyllis. I appreciate that.
What drew you to looking into this particular area and aspect? Tell me a little, tell the audience and me again, a little bit about your background, your life, and how you came on this journey in this lifetime.
Well, Phyllis, I started work on Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth, back in 2003. At that time, I was living in Chicago, and I was working as a self-employed marketing and communications consultant and feeling very unfulfilled by the work that I was doing. You know, I often had the thought that if I were to fall off the face of the earth, nobody would notice. My clients would simply plug somebody else into my role and carry on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to find a higher calling, a higher purpose to my life, but I didn't know what that would be or how to go about determining it.
Uh-huh.
So I did something that for me was very unusual, I'd never done before or even known anyone to do, and that is I went to see a psychic medium, and I thought I'll invest a little time and a little money, and if nothing comes from it, no harm done. Well, the session with the medium took place on May 7 of 2003, and the reason I remember the date is that that was the day on which my life changed. The medium introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, that is, highly evolved, non-physical consciousnesses with whom we plan our lives and who then guide us through those lives after we incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
And through the medium, I was able to talk with my guides. One of the things they said to me in this session was, you planned many of your greatest challenges before you were born. And I said, well, why in the world did I do that? And they said, you did that for purposes of spiritual growth. So we went on and talked a little bit about some of my challenges and why I had planned them. Well, I was astounded by this information, and in the days and weeks to come, it was on my mind constantly.
Mm-hmm.
The effect that it had is that it allowed me to go back and completely reframe the quote-unquote bad things that had happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
When those things happened originally, I didn't see any deeper purpose in them, and because they appeared to lack purpose, the suffering was much greater than it needed to be.
Right, exactly.
But now, knowing that I had planned these things, I could go back and understand what the deeper purpose was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized I was onto a concept that could bring a lot of healing and hope and inspiration to people and allow others to see deeper purpose in their lives the same way that I was. And so
mm-hmm.
I set out to write a book about it.
Okay. That sounds fabulous. And you have managed to do so.
Yes.
Right. And you've done a beautiful job, I might say.
Thank you.
All right, so where did this lead you into this now? We've got the chapter verse, and before we go on, let me just tell people that you know this is a live broadcast. Feel free to call in to BBS Radio to add your comments, questions, etc. It's 1-877-876-5227. Again, it's Robert Schwartz on The Higher Dimension, and I'm Phyllis Pricer. Go ahead.
Well, the next thing that happened in my research for Courageous Souls is that I was introduced to a woman who has the unique ability to channel her soul, her higher self. So I told her I was thinking of writing a book about why we plan challenges into our lives before we're born, and I asked, can I interview your soul about this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she agreed. So I interviewed her soul for a total of about 15 hours over the course of 5 meetings. Her soul told me in great detail about the planning for her life, which challenges had been chosen and why, which ones had been discussed but then set
mm-hmm.
aside. So these 15 hours were thrilling for me, and it verified and complemented the information that I had picked up in my session with the medium
mm-hmm.
and also through my own research and reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it formed the foundation for my book, Courageous Souls.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you felt that you had to, you went through a medium or a channeler, if you will, to obtain this information. Have you found other ways in your searches that this information can come to people individually?
Well, I think there are a number of ways to access information about our pre-birth planning. A lot of people can get information through meditation. People who are clairaudient can get information simply by talking with their guides and angels.
Mm-hmm.
But in my case, the way I researched people's pre-birth plans was that I collaborated with four very gifted mediums and channels, all of whom, when combined, had the exact skill set I needed to find out everything I wanted to know about various pre-birth plans. So, for example, one of the mediums has the unique ability to actually see and hear the pre-birth planning sessions in which we talk to each other
mm-hmm.
and discuss the challenges we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So through her, I was able to eavesdrop on these sessions, and the book, Courageous Souls, presents word for word the actual conversations people had with their future parents, their
mm-hmm.
future children, lovers, spouses,
mm-hmm.
friends, enemies, when, in spirit, they planned together to share these challenges.
Exactly. Excellent. Well, the reason why is there's a program called Life Between Lives. It's a hypnotherapy type of situation where people can, under hypnosis, enter into their own planning sessions. And again, with the same reason, to find out why they've gone through this, what their life missions and journeys are. So this is one way, and there are several others that I thought I would let you know about that. But it's fascinating that you chose, and why particularly through these particular mediums? Was it to assist them? Was that part of their soul mission, again, as an agreement with you?
I think that we did plan before we were born to collaborate on this book together, but the way I found these mediums, I can't even take credit for it myself. Initially, when I started the research for Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth, my thinking was that I would post messages online and ask for people who
mm-hmm.
actually remembered their pre-birth planning sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried that approach, but it didn't work. There basically was no one who recalled
it. Really?
I couldn't find anyone.
Wow.
But then I sort of threw up my arms and said to Spirit, okay, I need some help here.
Uh-huh.
And within a very short time period, these mediums found me and volunteered to collaborate with me.
Oh, that's
and I
wonderful.
Believe that we were all guided to each other.
Wonderful. This is fabulous. This is one of the gifts that we do have and that I wanted to bring out, is that we do have collaboration on the other levels of souls, and that we work together, and that we all get to where we're heading working in as a team, as it were, with other people, with other souls to achieve. Now, what is your goal? What was your mission in life specifically? And what are some of the challenges that you discovered and realized that, well, now that you know what it was and the reason for it, it's not so bad, or it lightened your load, if you will?
Well, I believe certainly that I planned before I was born to write the book Courageous Souls, and in fact to write a series of books about pre-birth planning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I felt that way before I had any confirmation of that fact, but during the course of my research for the book, I was working with a woman, Christina, who planned before she was born to be the quote-unquote victim in a bomb explosion.
Mm.
And we went into her pre-birth planning session and listened to the conversation in which she was actually agreeing to be the victim in this explosion, and she
mm-hmm.
was talking with the soul who was going to be the bomber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, later in her pre-birth planning session, I was there, and the medium saw me come up to Christina and say, I am planning to write a series of books that chronicle the journey of the soul. May I tell your story in one of my books? And then Christina and I forged a pre-birth agreement for her to share her story with me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Christina is clairaudient, so when I interviewed her, I asked to speak to one of her spirit guides, and I asked her guide, how did Christina and I know that we would ever even find each other? And we were told that because of our similar vibrations,
mm-hmm.
we were naturally attracted to each
mm-hmm.
other and would find each other. So this was very much part of my pre-birth plan to write these books.
Oh, and you're planning on writing another one.
Yes, I'm working on book two in the Courageous Souls series. It's going to be very similar to book one, but it will focus on the pre-birth planning of a different set of life challenges.
Such as?
Well, I don't know yet. And in fact, if any of your listeners are interested in sharing their story and working with some mediums to find out what they planned before they were born, they should feel free to contact me. I have a website at www.courageoussouls.com, and there's a contact form on there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even have to use their real names in the book. They can be anonymous if they prefer.
Mm-hmm.
But I am looking for people to interview for book two in the Courageous Souls series.
Would you be interested in people who have gone through this life between lives session?
I'm certainly open to that, sure.
Oh, good. Good. That's wonderful. So tell us a little bit more about what you discovered and why particularly did you choose writing as the medium? For any particular reason, or was it a long-standing gift that you had from other lifetimes?
I've always been a writer in this lifetime, and as I understand it, I've been a writer in some previous lives as well. In this lifetime, I was a freelance journalist. I did some work for Life magazine, U.S. News and World Report.
Oh, great.
And then in the consulting work I did, I was essentially doing corporate writing before I started work on Courageous Souls.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that my pre-birth plan was to have this ability to write and to use it for these books in service to other people.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Well, tell us some more of these stories and how they've come about and some of the purposes that people have found as far as their pre-birth planning sessions are concerned.
Well, the book Courageous Souls is organized by type of life challenge, and I tried to choose the most common challenges people face so that the book would be as helpful to people as possible. So in this book, I explore why people plan physical illness, deafness, blindness, accidents, having handicapped children, drug addiction, alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
and the death of a loved one. To take one story from the book, just to give your listeners an example.
Sure.
In the chapter on physical illness, there's a gentleman, John Elmore, who actually planned before he was born to have AIDS. Now, the reason he did this is that he wanted to serve humanity by increasing the amount of tolerance in the world. And when we went into John's pre-birth planning session, we heard the actual conversation in which he talked to the soul of the person who would be his lover and give him the AIDS virus. And they made a pre-birth agreement for John to contract AIDS in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We actually heard them say, and this is a direct quote from their conversation, that they wanted to, quote, teach their elders a substantive lesson in tolerance. So this is something that, you know, when viewed from the level of the personality, there's often a lot of judgment involved, and AIDS is a very shame-based illness.
Yes.
And when people hear that someone has AIDS, sometimes they think, well, he was promiscuous, he deserved it, he didn't take precautions.
Yeah.
This is actually not what's happening, though. In John's case,
mm-hmm.
he volunteered, he agreed to have this illness in order to be of service to humanity, to teach you and me and everybody else greater
mm-hmm.
tolerance. So I would submit to your listeners that we need to set judgment aside, look beyond what appears to be happening on the surface.
Oh, yes.
And in John's case, he's not someone who deserves our judgment or scorn. He's actually someone who deserves our admiration and our respect, and I would say our gratitude for having the raw courage to take on a mission that's this difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true. And just, you know, come along and talk about some other stories, because this is a really wonderful opportunity for people to expand their knowledge and awareness. And I would invite any listeners who believe that they've had insight to why they have had certain experiences in their life to come about and join, and what their purpose is in being in this lifetime, or if they've had a thought of what it was like to lose someone and what they thought perhaps that they learned from the loss, perhaps in an early part of your life, a parent or a sibling, that type of thing. You know, please feel free, especially if you felt there was a lot of pain or suffering that you couldn't understand. Why me? Why this situation? Why now? Is that correct? Would that help?
I think all of the major challenges that we face in life can be understood better by gaining some perspective on pre-birth planning.
Right.
To take another example from the book, just to give your listeners a sense
of
this. One of the people I worked with is a young African-American woman, Penelope, who was born completely deaf. She planned her deafness before she was born. When we went into her pre-birth planning session, we learned that in the lifetime immediately prior to this one, Penelope had the same mother she has in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that lifetime, the mother was shot to death by the mother's boyfriend.
Mm.
Penelope was a small child when that happened. She didn't actually see the murder, but she heard the gunshots that
mm-hmm.
killed her mother. And as you can imagine, she was quite psychologically traumatized by this event. Well, she ended up committing suicide later in that lifetime as a result of this trauma. And so she carried a need for healing the trauma with her back into spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And when she looked at this, the past lifetime, she said, all right, I'd like to plan another lifetime where I can heal what
mm-hmm.
needs to be healed from this trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And her spirit guide said, my dear, and I'm quoting now from her pre-birth planning session, my dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no trauma like this will happen again? And Penelope said, yes, that is what I want and what I wish to do.
Uh-huh.
So here you have a situation in which deafness was chosen by the person because she knew that it would facilitate the healing she wanted to accomplish in the upcoming lifetime.
Excellent. Okay. That is wonderful. Tell us some more stories. This is such a great thought.
Well, I mentioned earlier that there's one of the stories in the book is a woman, Christina, who planned to be the victim of a bomb explosion.
Right.
The reason Christina planned this is that she wanted to be a healer in this lifetime, and she wanted to be a very gifted healer who could make a great contribution to society. So she knew that if she could heal herself from the effects of this bomb explosion,
mm-hmm.
she would then have the opportunity later in life to take that wisdom and that knowledge and those healing skills and turn all of that outward in service to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what has happened. Because
mm.
after the bomb explosion in the years to come, she went on to get a PhD in speech-language pathology. She's
mm.
now in her 50s. The explosion took place back in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And in those intervening years, she has used the knowledge she acquired by healing herself to heal thousands and thousands of people. In fact, she actually has the ability to go into a patient's brain on an energetic level and
mm.
restore language capabilities.
Oh, fabulous.
So she's a profoundly gifted healer. And the reason she's able to do this kind of healing is that she healed herself from the bomb explosion that she herself planned.
Uh-huh. Absolutely wonderful. Does she use traditional therapies or alternative in this besides the, you know, how does she do... handle this?
She uses traditional treatments, but as I said, she also has the non-traditional ability simply on an energetic level to enter a patient's brain and restore language functioning. So she's able on many different levels to help people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, what did you find was fairly consistent as far as these stories were concerned? The pre-planning sessions, the purposes of these pre-planning sessions are specifically what, sir?
In my research for Courageous Souls, I found four primary reasons that we plan challenges into our lives. One I mentioned earlier, and that is healing, and Penelope is a very good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Another primary motivation for souls planning challenges is to be of service to others. And John Elmore, the gentleman with AIDS, is a good example of that in wanting to teach tolerance to the world.
Mm-hmm.
A third primary reason for planning life challenges is to balance karma. You know, your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the idea of karma. It's often conceptualized as cosmic debt, but in my research, I understand it more as unbalanced energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let's say that two people had a previous incarnation in which one was physically ill and the other was that person's caretaker. When
mm-hmm.
they transition back into spirit and have their life review, they will have a sense of unbalanced energy and will be motivated to balance it. The
mm-hmm.
easiest way to do that would be to have an incarnation in which they switch roles.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who was physically ill now plans to become the caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
The one who was the caretaker now plans the experience of physical illness.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes this so interesting and so challenging is that once embodied, neither of these souls will remember the pre-birth plan.
Right.
So the one who is now physically ill may feel burdened by the illness, and the one who is the caretaker may feel burdened by having to take care of someone else.
Hmm.
So the challenge becomes mm-hmm. one in which we try to express unconditional love
uh-huh.
under the most difficult of circumstances, and when we're able to do that, our souls are advanced.
Okay. Welcome. I believe we have a caller.
Yeah. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. Who's this?
Kim from Louisiana.
Hi, Kim.
Hi,
welcome
Kim.
To the Higher Dimensions.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks. I just...
Go ahead.
I just turned on the show, and so I just caught the end of the healer about the speech. My son has a speech delay.
Uh-huh.
And they don't really know exactly what it is beyond that. And so I'm hoping you could give me the name and the website of the woman that does the healing for speech.
Certainly.
Kim, the woman's name is Christina. And all of the people who are in the book, Courageous Souls, their email addresses are in an appendix at the back of the book. But I will look up Christina's email for you.
Great.
It's
thanks.
Soul Complete, SoulComplete at gmail.com. Now, Christina is in Colorado, so she would be a bit of a trip for you. But
yeah.
She also knows other gifted healers around the country, and she might be able to refer you to someone in Louisiana.
Yeah.
I would also mention to you, there is a chapter in Courageous Souls on the pre-birth planning of having handicapped children. Now, in that
mm-hmm.
chapter, the handicap is a bit different from what you've just described. It's the story of a woman in Florida, Jennifer Stewart, who plans, before she's born, to have two autistic sons. And the sons actually seek her out in spirit, and they ask her to be her mother because they know that she is gifted in regard to teaching about communication. She's done that in previous lives. And so they say to her, we are planning the experience of autism to stimulate our spiritual growth. Would you be the soul who incarnates as our mother and teaches us, helps us, to learn communication under these very difficult circumstances? And she agrees to do this because she loves these other souls and wants to be of service to them. So I don't know if you've thought that perhaps you and your child might have planned the speech impediment for some particular reason, but it's possible that you were sought out to be the parent because you were capable of handling this and making a contribution in circumstances that might be too difficult for others.
Yes.
Have you had any kind of feeling that there has been a deep soul connection with your child?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Wonderful. Fabulous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm so glad you tuned in. Keep listening.
Can you tell me what the writer's name is?
My name is Robert Schwartz.
Oh, certainly.
Robert, and you must have been on something else recently, huh?
I've been doing several radio interviews.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I heard the story about the mother and the two autistic kids really recently, unless I had it in a dream a couple nights ago, but I think it was, like, on the air.
Well, the website is CourageousSouls.com, and I would encourage you to take a look at it. There are some excerpts from the book there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Robert, and thank you, Phyllis. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for listening.
Yes.
All right. So let's go back to some more wonderful stories, because obviously we're inspiring people and giving hope.
One of the other stories in the book is in the chapter on death of a loved one.
Mm.
And this is the story of a woman in Louisiana, where Kim just called from. Her name is Valerie. And Valerie planned before she was born to lose two people at early stages of life. She lost a fiancé who died actually 48 hours after they got engaged.
Mm.
And she also lost her only son, Dustin, to a seemingly accidental drug overdose when he was in his teens. Now, when we went into Valerie's pre-birth planning session, we heard her talking with Dustin and with her fiancé, whose name is DC. And both of them told her, we are planning short lives for reasons of our own. We would leave you. Are you sure that you want to plan a life with us? Well, she had had many previous incarnations with both of them. She loved them very much. And she said, basically, my love for you is so great that, yes, I will accept the fact that you are not going to be with me as long as I would like, and I will utilize that to foster my own spiritual growth. I would rather have you in my life for a short time period than not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So her motivation for doing this was that in past lives, she had a tendency to get out of balance, to go to one extreme or another. And when she did her life reviews, she saw this tendency, and she thought, all right, I want to challenge myself in the same way, but this time I want to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a challenge that will push me off my center, and then I want to find my way back to that center, back to that place of balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she agreed to honor their plans to have short lives, thinking they would help her to accomplish something that she wanted to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also went into her son's pre-birth planning session, and this was very interesting because we learned that the person who sold him the drugs that caused his death was there, and they actually planned this as a potential exit point. It turns out that the two of them, the drug dealer and her son, had a previous incarnation together in which they were soldiers in a king's medieval army. And the drug dealer was hurt on the battlefield. He was in great pain. He was dying. And he said to Dustin, who was a fellow soldier, "Run me through with your sword and put me out of my pain."
Uh-huh.
And Dustin obliged him. He
uh-huh.
did run him through with his sword.
Uh-huh.
So when they were planning this incarnation, Dustin went to him and said, "I'm planning a short lifetime for various reasons of my own. I need an exit point. Would you agree, out of your love for me, to return that favor and sell me the drugs that will cause my seemingly accidental drug overdose?" And this story to me is really quite compelling because, again,
mm-hmm.
it's a situation that would be judged from the human perspective. We would judge the drug dealer and say, here's a bad person who did a bad thing and should be punished.
Mm-hmm.
But what's actually happening from the soul level, believe it or not, is a gesture of love. It's two souls who love each other, who planned an experience that both of them agreed to, and
mm-hmm.
the drug dealer actually made it possible for Dustin to have the short life that he wanted.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, we bring in perhaps moral judgments because we perceive this as not a good thing. Okay, now I can understand in this case that there was indeed an agreement, but there is a great deal of suffering that is put out by this. Where would this put our laws against inhumaneness and suffering and cruelty as far as this goes? If you were to carry it through, that anybody who sold drugs, anybody who did things that were wrong or shot or anything else, would indeed be carrying out a soul's destiny, if it will, or agreement, and then there should be no punishment for behavior that is against, say, the Ten Commandments here. We're talking about lives lost.
Well, that's a very good question, Phyllis, and actually it doesn't change the punishments or the laws at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that when a soul chooses to incarnate, when a soul plans a life, the soul knows exactly what the laws are and
mm-hmm.
what the consequences will be of any particular action.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of the drug dealer would know when planning the incarnation that there would be a punishment. That drug dealer would know what the punishment is likely to be,
uh-huh.
and the drug dealer would plan that into the life plan, wanting that experience for his or her own personal growth.
Gotcha.
From the human perspective, we don't change anything. We keep our laws in place. They're there for good reason, and mm-hmm. all of this is taken into account by the souls when they create these plans.
Mm-hmm. I just thought I'd bring it up.
It's a very good question.
Yeah, because It would, if you look at it from a higher plane, just be people balancing each other out. But on the other hand, the intricacy of relationships, and I use that word, are very, very complex because it's not just one lifetime, a group that you're talking about. It is many people with many lifetimes with a number of lessons that should be learned. And I don't know about you, but when I go to do something, I try to learn as much as I can so I don't have to keep repeating myself, which makes things a little interesting now and again.
Mm-hmm.
But from that standpoint, I find it interesting that people would indeed agree to do something now. We'd have to almost guess at why the person would agree to do this. In order to what? To find out what it was like to be a dealer or to experience, perhaps, being on the wrong side of the law and suffering?
Well, these kinds of seemingly negative experiences are not negative from the perspective of the soul. You know, we would look at incarceration as a terrible experience. But from the soul perspective, no experience is judged good or bad. It's simply viewed neutrally as
exactly.
a learning and growth opportunity.
Exactly.
Now, as to why the drug dealer, for example, might want to have the experience of incarceration, we can only speculate on that. It may be a karmic balancing. For example, perhaps in a previous incarnation, this soul was somebody who falsely accused someone and caused them to be incarcerated when they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So in a situation like that, the soul would plan a karmic balancing to experience the other side of his actions. Or
yes.
it could be that the soul wanted to perhaps be of service to the people, the other people who are in the prison. That could be another reason. There could be many, many reasons for wanting to plan something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this is why I asked the question, to bring it up. Because we have a tendency to grab at something and not really walk through it completely. Now, why would somebody wish to do this? You know, what one would think logically that the last thing we would want to do was find ourselves, you know, in incarceration. But as you say, we have people like Nelson Mandela. We have people like Johnny Cash. We have a number of people whom from the suffering standpoint, a negative, they have risen like Phoenix from the ashes.
Well, you know, sometimes you mentioned Nelson Mandela. I think experiences like his experience in prison, he's planned that, I would imagine, to be of service to humanity because he
exactly.
would know about the inspirational effects that that would have on the world.
Yes, absolutely. And so many people would agree to go to this. And we're talking like Mahatma Gandhi, for example, who gave up so much of his life because he was well-to-do, came from a well-to-do family, and look how he freed his people. So we have saints as well as sinners coming through and in the pre-planning sessions. And all of this, again, the complexity and the intricacy of all the lives with the immediate families, the stories, the circles are within circles, it's almost mind-boggling to look at how much planning there must be, and the almost like a dance, or a gavotte, I would say, a dance to achieve all of this and balance it out in a lifetime. It cannot be, if we stop and think and look at it, I do not think we can say that it was just stuff happening blindly and by coincidence, because it couldn't. There has to be some kind of logical, thought-provoking... does that make sense to you?
It does. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. I'm not doing... I know what I'm trying to say. Sometimes I don't get it out real well.
Well, I think perhaps one way of expressing the concept, and correct me if I'm not understanding you, is that very often it seems that the universe we live in is one that is random and arbitrary.
Yes.
But in fact, behind the seeming randomness, there's a plan in place.
Exactly. And the multiplicity of the planning, the complications, the intricate weaving that brings forth the circumstances are the odds of having it happen in such a cohesive, intelligent manner are just, you know, just don't work out.
The
so it has to be planned.
The universe is very, very finely tuned. And
yes.
The things that seem to us to be random and arbitrary really are not. What
exactly.
I found in my research for Courageous Souls is that the planning that souls do is very, very detailed and quite expansive, and it really goes beyond anything that could be comprehended by
mm-hmm.
the human brain.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You almost need a computer program to be able to... get everything set up in order. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, I think in some respects, the decision to become human is an experiment in limitation. You know, a human
yes.
being is a portion of a soul's energy
yes.
in a physical body.
Right.
And we place limitations on ourselves, mental limitations, physical limitations, that allow us to have experiences that we would never be able to have when we are in spirit, where really we are unlimited.
Exactly. And I agree with that. Now, that touches on a different aspect, so let's talk about that. That the experiences, as I said, sometimes you put it better than I do. I grope for the right word. but the experiences that we put ourselves into in human form, and we are only a portion of the soul existing in time and space during this period of time of being incarnated. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, time and space are illusions. They're illusions and teaching tools.
Yes.
And when we have learned everything from these tools that we want to learn, then they will cease to exist for us.
Right. We move on to the next level, shall we say.
Yes, and the so-called higher levels don't include time or space.
That is correct. And that is a concept that is just really being studied, I believe, by scientists at this point. They're beginning to understand that time doesn't exist. And they're trying to figure out how to put that into scientific terms and mathematical equations. And I find that absolutely fascinating too. The thought that there is, we can explore this a little more. Develop a little more the concept of the beings that we are not holistic, wholly and completely here, that only a portion of us are on this earth plane at any given time.
My understanding of the soul is that the soul resides in many dimensions simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
The soul is quite vast. A soul can have multiple incarnations going on at the same time, not necessarily on planet Earth, but in other planets,
mm-hmm.
and also be present in non-physical dimensions
mm-hmm.
at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you could think of it almost in these terms, and I'm borrowing from one of the mediums I work with, Corby Mitley, who says that it's as though the soul is the arm, and then it extends down to the hand, and each finger is like an incarnation, like a personality in a body. So the soul is projecting its energy into those fingers, and the fingers can be anywhere. They can be on planet Earth or another physical planet or a non-physical dimension.
Hmm. Okay. That's an interesting way of describing it. It's different than I had visualized it, but it makes as good a sense in descriptive terms as any I've heard. Many people are not really aware or familiar with or even comfortable with the fact that they may be indeed living in multiple lives at the same time. Now, would that be another life here on Earth, another life in another dimension?
It's unusual for a soul to have more than one incarnation on Earth at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, it does happen occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
One reason a soul might do that, just to give you a feel for it, is that, let's say a soul wants to have a particularly strong impact on the world.
Mm-hmm.
Since everything is vibration, everything is energy, everything is frequency, a soul might plan to have two incarnations on Earth at the same time, and then put them at opposite ends of the planet to sort of spread out and maximize the energetic impact on Earth at that time.
Hmm.
But this is very unusual. Generally, a soul will have only one incarnation here at any given time. Now, there are parallel dimensions, parallel universes.
Okay, that's the other thing I was going to mention.
That's something that is a little bit beyond my area of expertise. I know that they exist. I know that all sorts of different variations on the same plan are being played out, but I can't really tell you much more about it than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of literature that deals with that, to my knowledge, that I have run across.
I don't believe there is, and of course that's because it would be a very difficult thing to research.
Yes. You know, how would you prove it? Again, the fascination that is, I think, so important is working with this concept of life agreed to live. That would also encompass the battlefields that we have now and the loss of life of those who have gone into this in conflicts now, either here or anywhere else on the face of this earth at this time. Am I not right? That there is an agreement to leave this planet through the use of, again, loss of life. And a lot of people are concerned about the loss of life, and yet there is a reason and a purpose for those who do leave the earth plane in battle and those who choose to stay and survive?
It's almost always part of a pre-birth plan, and so a soul would know whether or not a war was probable, possible,
mm-hmm.
unlikely, and all of this would be taken into account in the pre-birth planning session.
Mm-hmm.
So if a soldier goes off to Iraq or to some other war, to
mm-hmm.
a place of battle somewhere on Earth, and is killed, the loss of life is a tremendous loss from the human perspective, and certainly it's painful and something to be mourned, to be grieved. But from the soul-level perspective, that contingency would have been accounted for, and if it happens, it can only happen if the lifetime has served the function that the soul originally planned for.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quote in Courageous Souls in the chapter on the death of a loved one. I speak with the soul of Valerie, the person I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Corby Mitleid, one of the mediums, has the ability to channel an interviewee's soul. So we're talking about this very point. And her soul said to me, be assured that when a personality dies, when a body discorporates, everything that was intended to be gained from the life has been gained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true, because otherwise the soul would not withdraw its energy from the body.
Right.
And even in the middle of the worst battle, somehow, if there
mm-hmm.
was something to be gained by the incarnation continuing, person would find a way to stay alive.
Right, exactly. Yes, I agree. I agree. And that's why there are some miraculous stories.
That's right, yes.
All right. And also, with those who are wounded and come back, these are also agreements that the souls have to go through these particular sufferings. And they're not nonsensical. They are soul lessons providing the opportunity for the individual souls, as well as their families and friends, to participate in the healing and the aftermath of traumatic injuries. Is that correct?
That's very true. A lot of times when someone suffers a severe accident or is badly wounded, say, in a war,
mm-hmm.
in many of those situations, the learning is more about the people who are going to help that person
mm-hmm.
than that person themselves. So that person has volunteered to take on an injury of some kind
mm-hmm.
so that loved ones have the opportunity to express unconditional love, express
mm-hmm.
empathy, express compassion. It's through the expression of those things while in body that we come to a deeper understanding of what it means to be
mm-hmm.
loving, to be compassionate, to be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person often volunteers to take on the injury or the accident so that others can have that experience.
You know, I believe that if this were more widely known and understood, that this would indeed provide relief to many families.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons I wrote Courageous Souls, because there is so much suffering that seems to have no deeper purpose. And if we could understand that there is a deeper purpose, that these things are planned,
mm-hmm.
and also that the suffering really is very temporary. Now, it may not seem that way from the human perspective.
Well, because we are only aware of our own limitations as far as the physical is concerned.
Yes, but from the soul-level perspective, you know, a lifetime is as brief as a clap of thunder. It's here and then it's gone.
I agree.
So the suffering is very transitory, but the wisdom that we acquire from it becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity.
Exactly. It is also an ability to be shared with other souls that are not of the sphere. That is my understanding also.
That's also my understanding. The learning that is acquired radiates throughout the soul group, which is a collection of souls at the same evolutionary stage
mm-hmm.
who plan lives together. And because all beings are one, really, all are energetically connected,
mm-hmm.
it really radiates throughout the entire cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so there is yet a greater plan. Again, I'm talking about wheels within wheels.
Yes, exactly.
A multiplicity. And then also we're talking about levels of learning that occur. So it's not just on this level only that the souls are able to learn, but on other levels, and providing the opportunity for research and development, I guess you might call it, elsewhere, without those particular souls having to go through it, because they can learn from the experiences that they have observed souls here going through.
That's exactly right. You know, it's very much like dropping a small stone into a still pond. The stone may be very small and seemingly insignificant, but the ripples from those
yes.
waves go throughout the entire pond. And that's what we're doing here. The things that we do, what we see, what we learn, it affects the entire universe.
Yes. And we tend to forget that because we are so closed here and caught up in our own lives, as it were, lives, I should say, that we have this veil of forgetfulness that is drawn down, and then we get into, I think, a negative spin where nothing comes through to us.
I think that's a very good description of what happens. Also, the average person doesn't have the ability, using their five senses, to
mm-hmm.
see the energetic connections between and among people.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that we're separate beings having distinct experiences, but in fact, we're all actually connected, and
exactly.
what one experiences affects everyone else.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, are there some other things that we have really ranged a field here, and I think it's absolutely wonderful. I'm enjoying your conversation.
Thank you.
And the wisdom that is being shared with our listeners, I almost said readers, but that would be true too, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
What are some of the other things that you had hoped to share with people this evening?
Well, one message that I'd like to leave your listeners with is that, you know, so often people define themselves in terms of what they believe to be their faults or their limitations. And I would say to your listeners, anything that you have that you consider to be a fault or a limitation is temporary. It's a part of your personality that
mm-hmm.
was constructed for this lifetime because it would facilitate your growth and learning. But it's not who you really are. Who
right.
you really are is a divine, holy, eternal soul. And when you pass back into spirit at the end of this lifetime, these perceived faults and limitations will dissolve. They're not going to be carried with you. What goes back into spirit is the immortal core that reunites, so to speak, with the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I understand from my research that souls are made quite literally from the energy of love.
Yes.
And so we come here to the physical dimension to learn how to express and receive love under very challenging circumstances, and in doing so, we arrive at a more profound knowing of who we are as loving souls. But it's that loving immortal core that returns to spirit at the end of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So really, one of the purposes in writing the book, Courageous Souls, was to help people make a shift from personality, body consciousness, to soul-level consciousness. And I think if we can define ourselves as soul, as immortal beings, as holy beings,
mm-hmm.
then we come into a greater recollection of who we really are.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very, very true. And what else do you have that would you think that we could share? We're ranging, as I said, very widely, and you've answered most of the questions that I had come up with. Is there anything I've missed?
Well, I'd be happy to share another story from the book with your listeners.
Oh, surely.
One of the stories in Courageous Souls that I find most touching and one of the most important stories is a woman, Sharon Dembinski, who's in New England. Sharon and her son, Tony, planned before either one of them was born for Tony to have a heroin addiction.
Right.
Now, this is another one of these situations in which, from the level of the personality, we often judge. We look at people who have drug addictions, and
mm-hmm.
we tend to think, this person needs to get their act together. This person is not coping well with life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what really happened here, it's very, very different than that. Before she was born, Sharon decided that she wanted to be of service to humanity in a very significant way. And so she planned to be a pediatric nurse in this
mm-hmm.
lifetime. She and her son, Tony, also planned that he would have a heroin addiction because she knew that during the course of treating him and helping him to beat the heroin addiction, she would learn a lot about methadone and healing and acquire a great deal of wisdom about it and then be able to turn those skills outward, again, in service to humanity. And that's exactly what she's done. She went on to be the founder of a group in New England called Mothers on Methadone.
Mm-hmm.
And this group has been very successful in helping heroin-addicted pregnant women get off heroin,
mm-hmm.
get on methadone instead, and therefore be able to give birth to healthy babies.
Mm-hmm.
The reason she was able to found this group, the motivation for it, came from her experiences helping her son get off heroin through the use of methadone. So they planned his drug addiction as a form of service to humanity. And again, similar to, say, John Elmore, who planned to have AIDS, it's something that we tend to judge when, in fact, we should really be grateful to them.
Celebrating.
Yes, because it was a form of service to us, and they've made a great contribution.
Mm-hmm. There are those who would not want to subscribe to this because they feel the separateness and because, my feeling is, they are judgmental. And part of the awareness is that they may have had lifetimes of judgmentalness, and this may be just a beginning for them in awareness to bring to another lifetime. And I don't know where that came from. But sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I just, you know, something pops out at the top of my little pointed head. But while you were saying that, I was feeling that there are those who are so rigid that they have several lifetimes, and so information has to be spoon-fed to them, if you will.
I think that that's very possible. And there are also many people who cannot accept the idea of pre-birth planning because
yes.
they're in a victimization mindset.
Exactly. And, poor me, yes.
And someone who is invested in being a victim doesn't take very kindly to this sort of thinking.
That is true, too. And again, I think that's why there's this groundswell of understanding of prior lifetimes and the purposes, because it's gone from just being so living with blinders on in a narrow-focused life to an expanded awareness. And I think that's basically what Christ came to teach us, and Buddha, and some other great teachers, that there is a greater expansive awareness, and we tend to get these great leaders who come in once in a while, and the next thing you know, everybody's back in their own little tiny world trying to enforce rights rather than understand and live ideals. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, the energetic impact from someone like Christ having been on Earth, that radiates infinitely outward. So.
Yes. It does.
The planet is quite different than it would otherwise be had that
Absolutely.
Incarnation not occurred.
And I agree with that also. But I just find that people have a tendency to try to want to cut themselves off and hunker into their own world where they don't have to think and be aware. And so they just sort of like retreat indoors mentally. And shut the door after them, and they don't want to peek out. They don't want to learn anything new. They don't want to think that there's something else out there, because, by golly, they'd actually have to take responsibility for themselves.
But, you know, every experience that someone has is, I think, the experience they need for their greatest learning. So even
mm-hmm.
even in that situation, someone shutting themselves off from life, although we might look at that and think that the person is not well served by that, it will ultimately lead to the learning that they need.
Certainly, but I'm just saying that it's a shame that sometimes, but again, sometimes it's a way that it's how they would learn. It's
That's
how
right.
it meets their method in madness. And I think also when they do that, are they not only also serving a greater purpose? For people will say, oh, look at that person shutting themselves in. I don't want to do that.
That's true.
And so they themselves become, through their behavior, and awareness expansion for the life's lessons.
I think that's very true. Even in those cases, we can learn who we don't want to be or how we don't want to live our lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Were there stories that you were not able to put or chose not to put into your book?
That's a very good question. The answer is that there are some stories that I actually took out of book one and am holding for book two, and that's because they're more challenging for people to accept than the stories I put into book one. They're challenges,
really?
Yes, they're challenges that are in some respects more frightening, more suffering is involved, that it's very difficult to understand why anybody would agree to these plans before birth. And I felt that it might be in the best interest to hold those for book two because it would follow more naturally after reading the stories in book one.
Okay. Is there anything you care to share with us at this point, or are you just going to keep it for your book?
No, I think I'll let people remain in suspense there.
Okay. I thought that would be the case, but you'd never hurt to ask.
That's right.
And for your own purpose at this time, why do you think you were led into this particular field, again, to share with others?
I think that we live in a time of great spiritual awakening, and that there are many people who, like I, have a life plan to share some piece of wisdom or some bit of information that would allow those who come across it to have some kind of spiritual awakening. And by awakening, I mean, again, feeling and knowing that you are more than your body, you are more than your personality, that you are an eternal being. There are many people doing some work in far-flung areas that could contribute to that kind of awakening, and it's happening all over the planet now. And I think I'm one person among many who's doing this kind of work.
Okay. I agree. I think that's wonderful. Are there any other stories or anything else I may have missed that you would like to share? I think I've covered most of it, but I could be wrong.
Well, I'd just like to tell your listeners once again, there is a website, www.courageoussouls.com. And if they go to the About the Book page there, there's a free PDF sample of the book that they can download. There are excerpts, reader comments, professional reviews. You can order the book online. For those who don't have Internet access, it can be ordered at a toll-free number, which is 800-742-0148. And I'll say that once more. It's 800-742-0148. And if people prefer, they can also order Courageous Souls on Amazon.
Okay. And so I think something else also. Remind them again that you are now seeking the stories of people who would want to share. And I'll be glad to refer someone or other stories to you, if you like.
Absolutely. I'd appreciate that. Anyone who might like to share their story in book two of the Courageous Souls series, they can reach me through CourageousSouls.com or by email at author@CourageousSouls.com.
All right. Again, this is Phyllis Pricer with BBS Radio. We're on the Higher Dimension. I am so delighted to have had you. I think we might have a little more time, so if there are more stories that you would care to share, I think